Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I am here with Alex Althausen. He is the founder of Banksters, the game that I have been spending hours, days, and nights grinding and working towards. Alex, how are you doing, buddy?
Hi. Hi, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. We've spent many days, many hours in each other's company talking about the future of Web3, talking about gaming, talking about decentralization, talking about where can blockchain technology be used to transform stuff. And I'm hoping a lot of those conversations, some of the great stuff that we've shared in the past, can come out for the audience today. And we're going to be doing a world first on today's show. This is going to sound a little bit weird for the podcasters, but stick with it. For those who are only listening in on audio, but for those who are with us on LinkedIn Live, we're actually going to play Banksters. We're going to play a game live on LinkedIn. Hoping this doesn't contravene any terms of service or anything weird like that, but we thought, well, what's the best way of being able to describe how a Web3 game looks and feels? We just go and play it. And so if you're up for that today, Alex, I challenge you to a duel on Banksters. Are you up for the challenge?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
I know I'm going to get my ass handed to me by the guy who's actually created the game. He knows all the strategies, he's got all the buffs, but I'm still going to give it a try. I've been grinding and working a little bit in the background in preparation for today, so I think it's going to be a good contest. And you've got to promise not to cheat, though, because when we go live stream, you'll be able to see my screen and what I'm doing. So I have to you have to promise me that you're going to put the blinders on.
Yeah, look, first of all, you cannot imagine how many times I was smashed by other players playing Banksters, so it's fine, and I pretty believe that even if I see your screen, you can still beat me.
Well, we'll see how it goes. Alex, kick us off. Give us your story. So you've had an interesting route to Web3 and to becoming a Web3 founder with Banksters. How did you get here, and what was the trigger? What was it that brought you into Web3 and the desire to come and found and do stuff here for real?
Okay. Look, it was all about the crypto hype in 2017, I would say. I was there in the industry. These days, we never call it Web3. It was just the crypto stuff, yeah? It started for me in 2014 when we first listed Bitcoin as the trading instrument, and the investment broker I was working at this moment. And it was like amazing instrument for trading. These days, not a lot of companies offered this, and we faced a huge customer demand in 2017, just being among first who listed Bitcoin for trading. And you know, I was just so much stunned by the fact how many people were like just want to touch it. And I had something to compare with. It was like investment to stocks, to oil, gold, and so on. And then this huge demand to Bitcoin was like, huh, moment to me. And I was learning more until the real trigger happened to me in 2017, I believe, 18. We used to visit the Silicon Valley, the California, together with my team. And we used to visit the Coinbase headquarters in San Francisco. Had a nice talk to the two guys, touching this ground right after the hype actually slowed down. It was like the huge drop from 20K to, you remember this drama. And it was very close, to be honest, to the time that we see now. After the huge drop, it was some crypto winter, we considered in 2018. It was a time of building, but still a huge demand. And I was talking to myself, like, you need to dedicate to this industry all your efforts. And therefore, we started building Storm Game, which used to be crypto derivatives platform. In 2019, we already were live. And yeah, since then, the crypto and Web3 became a big part of my life, let's say, day-to-day job. And yeah, That was an amazing 4 years until 2023, where we now. Now we are building absolutely different products, the industry more mature. But in general, yes, this was the path.
And it was a good path. And it's mad to think that it's only been 4 years in terms of how much ground has been covered. You've gone from having a Bitcoin instrument and kind of comparing the demand for Tesla stock at the time, then, you know, compare a Russian surge of Bitcoin from a broker perspective, to then say, well, actually, no, we need to launch a platform here. We need to have a dedicated crypto platform, which was StormGain. You went through the sponsorship experience as well. You got, you know, incredible awareness, incredible eminence. I know this because I'm a Newcastle United football supporter. And before we even met, I had Newcastle shirts with StormGain on the sleeve. And so at this point, you're like, well, you have a crypto derivatives platform that has a sponsorship of a major team. We weren't a major team at the time. We are now. I can say that jokingly. I mean, we were a big team then too. But then to saying, okay, well, we've done that. That's our 4 years. Tradable Bitcoin, full crypto platform, and now gaming, right? So catch us up to present day. What was the moment when you said, you know what it is? I'm going to go build a video game.
It's a tricky point because I'm still considering Banksters as the fintech product, first of all. Wrapped into the gaming package and the gaming version of what I'm trying to do for the rest 5 years. It's actually the fintech product, and it's a little bit continuing or even expanding what people can do on the crypto exchanges, derivative platforms, swap exchanges, NFT marketplaces. And all these, let's say we call it Web3 services nowadays, yeah? But in general, the game is an attempt for the mass adoption. Let me unpack this a little bit.
Yeah, particularly the fintech part, because that's the bit that makes a difference. And that's why I was so interested when you first started talking about it. It's like the game is the mechanism, right? The game is a way of creating a front end that people would engage with. But the real the real magic is in the back.
Yeah, look, I mean, the real magic, as soon as we are here and all our followers now listening to us, I'm pretty believe you all guys are crypto believers, or at least touched crypto once and thought at least once, what is it? Something curious. The same feeling I'm expecting from the 85% of the population of planet Earth. As soon as now we are not yet there and the mass adoption is far away, and we are going to do something to make it mass. To make it mass, you really need a lot of people to touch it without being afraid of being scammed, of not understanding something, sending your crypto to some different blockchain and forget about your whatever money. So it's all very scary and it's so very shady. And they can say the Web3 is a bunch of scam project that appeared last years. And, you know, from the normal person perspective, it's a shady shit. Let me be honest. And our job is to unpack the technology, to show how serious actually what is underneath of what we are trying to pack as ICO, IGO, IDO on different projects, trying to collect some money. Normal people do not see the value. That's why they probably scared. That's why the mass adoption is not coming. That's why people do not use it on the large scale, right? I mean, on the everybody. So on StormGain, when we started in 2019, it was something like 50 million crypto users at all, planet Earth. Nowadays, we're talking about 450 million, maybe half billion users. Effectively, on StormGain, we started to resolve this problem. How to give this product to more hands not only crypto enthusiasts. So not going deep into details, we're able to register 15 million people on the platform yet now. Out of these 450 million at all, like 15 million still significant amount, we were touching like 3% of the whole crypto population. And I was like, not bad, but still not mass adoption. Like 15 million, what is it? It's like a size of the normal Web2 service. What is Spotify doing? What is like, it's nothing, still nothing. I mean, what can we do to give it to the more hands, give it and as an opportunity? So I found myself, like, I was a player all my life. Since I remember myself, I was playing like consoles, playing PC, playing whatever I can play, actually phone. So now people do understand things better if they're playing, not learning. And I was find myself at the situation, the mass adoption will come anyway. People will adopt more crypto because the big brands will adopt more crypto, because banks will adopt more crypto, mobile operators will adopt it, and so on. So anyway, people will learn about it somehow. And the way we learn could be different. I found the best way people to learn fintech stuff about trading, NFTs, different crypto coins, influence on market, and so on, to be done in a gamification way, to be gamified as much as possible on every single step of user lifetime journey in crypto. Also, better without any risk or with the minimum risk to the money exposure that the customer was. So imagine you can learn something about crypto just playing the game and actually being rewarded for what you learned before you jump into the serious game with the real Bitcoin, Ethereum, whatever you want. You can just play something, learn something, and then when you're familiar enough with this, when you feel yourself strong enough to jump into the serious game, you then download the Binance, BitMEX, whatever it is.
And then you start leveraging.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, no advertising here, guys. I mean, it's just an example of something that people do for a serious stuff. At the same time, we know that only 5 to 10% of the global population today touched crypto. No matter what. I mean, Binance can be number one in the world, like Coinbase, whatever. It's still number one among 10% of the population. And I'm thinking about another 90%, maybe less, but still a lot more than we are talking about now. And these people will be interesting. Okay, I need to learn this anyway, because these banks doing this with me. And it's like the same like we learned with the credit cards, how to use it in the internet was not like from day one easy, right? How to issue and how to protect ourselves with our CVV, not to tell it to everybody. All these learnings actually didn't come with the in the envelope with the your card. You learned this because you heard somebody was hacked, somebody was like scammed with his credit card. It's all the same for crypto, and we will be among first who is like doing this adoption to the planet Earth.
Nice. I like that. And education has always been a big part of the story. That's the reason why I started the show. The reason why I started posting on LinkedIn is that I have a belief that the technology that we're building with can have benefits for humans and companies, ultimately, at the simplest possible level, that there is value in architecting in a decentralized way, or that building applications that can't be taken down or that can't be stopped, or building platforms that are open. I was at a conference yesterday, and a big part of the why for me still is that we're able to create open platforms that can't be censored, or that don't lend themselves to abuse of users. And so we have technology that can enable that. But the point of having a mass adoption, as you describe, is it's not about saying that we have crypto as a speculative asset, therefore you must go and buy crypto because it's going to go up one day. Not at all, right? The point is that some of the rules of this type of architecture is that you need to manage your own keys to some extent, or you need to have familiarity with tokens and wallet addresses because it's a little bit more sophisticated than email. There are elements to self-custody or managing your own financial affairs that mean you have to protect yourself a little bit more from outside threats in a way that previously a bank or your insurer may choose to protect you or may be able to protect you, or your government may be able to protect you. And simulating that protection or learning that protection is something that we can do through applications. And so was that the genesis moment? Was it a philanthropic mission to help people enter Web3 more easily, mixed with a little bit of DGen gamer inside?
Oh, look, I mean, it's more than that. It's also the financial reasons as well, not only for myself or the team, but also for the early players and later players who will join the game to be rewarded. And this is like not so much philanthropic, but it's just the justice, I would say. While I was playing World of Warcraft, sorry, again, not an advertising here, but I was always surprised why I cannot sell some of my items if I'm done with the game. If I'm done with my car, I can sell my car. If I can even sell my apartment if I'm done with it. But what happened to my sword or, I don't know, car or something in my game, which I actually invested a lot, not only money, I invested my time, my efforts. I was using bad language several times while achieving this. So means, I mean, it's a part of my soul already, more than just investment in tokens or whatever. Why cannot I sell it? And it was like just, you know, it's a matter of time. When and where we came to the point, then yes, a player is an owner, and we need to educate a player as an owner of everything. But look at Electronic Arts, and all these guys are jumping aboard quite fast, and they do understand it better than do it themselves and charge the commission for the players. Then the industry will kill these AAA brands because another football will appear rewarding players, or another NBA, whatever, will appear. So
we can't put that genie back in the bottle now. The ability to try and to have shared incentives as opposed to centralized incentives, or you know, the second you had fractionalization of ownership, or the Fiverr style gig economy, you can't put that genie back in the box. All you can do is improve the user experience to become more competitive. Or exactly, or adopt it yourself. I'm just trying to imagine the strength of the rage quit where you have such a bad day on World of Warcraft that you sell your own car in your apartment because you're so mad at the game.
Look, when you are trying in a raid so long and you need a lot of flasks, you're probably selling something from your real world. Yeah, but that's the purpose of a game, and you have a lot of fun instead. So that's first of all the first element is the fun. It should be fun and then probably educative in my case, or in case of World of Warcraft, it's a different story and another epoch, I would say. But yeah, another social element inside, definitely there is. For our, let's not call it philanthropic and call it like the normal world, what I would call the normal world applies to the gaming finally. And now the having something, selling something is a normal practice in a game. Look, even the GTA promises the play to earn model in the next part because they have an army of, I don't know how many millions are playing every day.
They've already proven the creator economy part of what they're doing because you've got custom races, custom vehicles. You've got people doing role playing on Twitch, having their own dedicated servers, doing what is essentially a live action TV show through GTA.
This is what is happening. Yeah.
Incredible. And that's an economy based around a game, multiplied by streaming platforms, multiplied by content creators, multiplied by developers.
And so this is interoperability we are talking about, actually. I mean, this is what this is like a smart words I hate to use, but in general, we want the more more players, I mean, I'm not calling players like users of a game, more players join the opportunity. I mean, like you said, the video streamers mostly care about the advertising they can sell. So in this case, look, it's all coming from the big business perspectives. It's all about the expanding the industry to the from $1.5 trillion to $15 trillion, just because it's having this value for everybody.
And if you look at the studios today, we're not at the beginning anymore, right? When we had Axie Infinity or DeFi Kingdoms or some of the early kind of not particularly high fidelity, but games that were making use of DeFi mechanics in the back end and just putting a slightly clunky front end. We had those days where game companies would probably look at that and say, yeah, that's never going to catch on, right? That's got a niche audience. It's not something I have to be worried about. To then now seeing AAA titles being commissioned or large studios or, you know, the big technology providers to games, Unity, Epic Games, providing app stores with Web3 capabilities plugged in, we're in a different playing field now, right? Do you think Web3 games see this as, do you think the studios building games, full stop, see Web3 as an opportunity or a threat now?
Yeah. Look, it all depends on which studios we're talking about. It's exactly the perspective of what we discussed with GTA. So looks like these guys seeing a lot of opportunities here, yeah? Some game studios like Electronic Arts, I'm pretty sure now we are talking they're developing. So it's pretty easy to say. But there will be a dinosaurs, definitely, that will not survive this race because they refuse this as the let's say the basic, the
new status quo.
Yes, the new status quo. At the same time, you know, some of titles, it all depends how deep is the game, because imagine the line game, I mean, which are like average player is the housekeeper female 35 plus. This is like a average portrait of the top one portrait of a user of a game. For these games, maybe there is no so big threat in case of Web3. They should not consider, because it's a time killer. It's probably like you have 3 minutes, you do it, you then close it and disappear. You have no progress, you have no interest, you just continue doing the same mechanics. Probably for this kind of games or time killers, Web3 is nothing to play with or less opportunity it opens. But when we are talking about something where player is having empathy to what he sees on the screen, it could be a hero he's playing with, or it could be Axie Monster is also having some empathy. It could be cute. And yeah, it also played a huge role for this. People were choosing not only by traits of these monsters, but also how cute is it. And that's good. That's also unpacking a lot of economy here.
Yeah, it's like comparing the 90s or 2000s version of this would be to have posters of video games on your wall. Right? So when you're in your bedroom, you have a picture of Diablo or you have a picture of FIFA 2021 or whatever else it is on the wall. Nowadays, actually, you can take some of that IP, you can make it portable. You can bring that IP with you into other platforms. At worst case, you can look at it in your wallet, which, you know, maybe is not the most immersive experience, but it's only going to get more immersive over time.
Yeah, I totally agree with you here. Here we have a huge opportunities for everybody, for all players, especially for the deep games, for games with the graphics, for games with the plot behind, or something like at least allows user to spend more time having more fun, pump the character, level it up, and so on and so forth, then we are talking about serious benefits for those who are playing and who is around this ecosystem.
Yeah, the economics are not always complicated either, because as a game developer, you want people to engage with your game. You want them to either have spent time building it, which builds rapport or builds interest. Maybe at some point it requires in-game purchases, at which point there's a value exchange to allow the person to progress further down. And if at some point you're done with that and you want to trade your levels to somebody else, at least the game developer has had somebody work their way through sufficiently to then be able to get their return on investment. Right? You as a player have committed enough to the game, have maybe purchased or, you know, provided an exchange of value, at which point the game developer is like, that's sunk, that's good. I'd love more people to play the game and to play through or to want to buy through, if that's part of the commercial model, because that's how we make money. That's how we return the cost it took to make the game or to add new content. But if somebody's, you know, been through that level and providing that it's hard enough that not everybody's going to get to that level and start selling back to more junior players, the economics still sort of makes sense.
Yeah.
Although that is still a complex economic equation in terms of how much do you make it hard to get to certain levels, how much value is then attributed to that particular item, which could be open market. And then do you choose to take a secondary market cut of people who sell their content? Because that's a big part of the marketplace economic design as well, is the marketplace is owned by the game developer. And so even if you're choosing to transact back, the game developer gets a cut of how much you sell it for. So there's still a way to capture money even on that open market type.
Yeah, that's absolutely so. We can see it everywhere. For the small cut for the game developer, today we see the new wave of this blur. You see this zero royalties to creator. And now the market is playing with this new state of like zero royalties to creator, which is, again, from one perspective, when we are talking about art or music, for me sounds weird, because these people who create something need to be rewarded for this. But if we are talking about the game and that selling NFTs as the way to promote an easygoing entrance to the game for customers, and then the game developer sacrifice the royalty for this purpose, I'm considering this is okay. So this probably can work in my case, because the first token sale, we would probably do the like a gas fee, or we will sponsor this for the players but only first time. So, but this is like could be an instrument for marketing as well, a relatively cheap instrument, because it's
nice. And yeah, if you're starting to then get into maybe some of the hindrances to the user experience, we already talked a little bit about wallets, then you've got, you know, blockchains have as part of its economic security the requirement to pay for transactions to prevent against denial of service attacks, to prevent people spamming the chain. There is then, as a result, a fee, a cost to spam the chain. And the question is, if you're going to use that infrastructure, do you as a game developer want to charge the user every time something happens meaningful in the game that it requires the wallet? Do you want to charge them for that, or do you want to make that fee free? And so then there's just a requirement to think about maybe not the technicalities of that, because you can do gas-free minting. That's relatively easy to do on most gaming-focused chains now. The question is, how does that impact your economic cost as a developer, right? If you can scale, imagine this, right? When Facebook and YouTube were taking off, the reason, and Twitter as well to that extent, they knew that there was going to be kind of a forward projected cost of the amount of content they had to store, the amount of cloud and compute that they would need to use. And so for the number of users and then the number of tweets or the number of messages or the amount of content, you could predict forward revenues versus costs. The same is also true of gaming, right? So as you're projecting forward, I believe that the typical game mechanic for us, or the typical journey for the gamer, is this many actions through this many levels with this many transactions. We can have high and low ranges for gas fees, and then we make an assumption on what that's going to cost. Mm-hmm. If that fits your model, run with it. If it doesn't fit your model, or if you're working on a chain that has particularly volatile fees, that may be a less positive story for you.
Yeah, I agree. Here it's a matter of choosing the right blockchain for sure. And to be honest, it's a matter of not putting every single step of the player to the blockchain, because it makes no sense at all. First of all, for the player, and we will never see, probably we will see some niche fully Web3 games, which is like every single step is like recorded on the DLT. But I don't see a purpose of this, because it's expensive and not needed. Nobody is asking us to write down every single step to the blockchain. We need to write on the blockchain the most important things, which are the ownership, changing the ownership. We need the money flow to be written there. We need some economical states to be there. Maybe in case of the tournaments, we need to say this was number one, number two, number three. It's fine. But to do this like a fully on-chain, equal to me, to make it expensive as hell without a visible reason for user to do it. Imagine in the normal game, like a World of Warcraft or something like this, or Need for Speed, you need to pay every time something when you win the race or you win the match in FIFA. It sounds ridiculous, because
it's not going to work that way.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Some things, what I'm trying to say, some things will still remain Web2, let's call it, or let's call it will be in the normal databases or SQL, instead of being on DLT digital layer, right, or blockchain layer.
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, there was a tweet, what was it, about 3-4 months ago from Dr. Disrespect, amazing Twitch streamer, YouTube gamer, very, very funny guy, mullet, mustache, sunglasses, famous for rage quitting and yelling at the screen and all of the usual things that the young kids love when they watch gamers online. But he put out an incredibly poignant tweet, which was, imagine the scenes when you start people watching in, seeing a rescue mission, or, you know, an exfil type of game where you're carrying, or you're trying to escape with an item worth $100,000 of real world value. Yeah. And the amount of excitement that that's going to create, the amount of adrenaline, the amount of dopamine going on when you know that's on the line. You know, when you see gamers playing for pink slips, or, you know, discard games on FIFA when, you know, you have to discard 100,000 coin player or whatever else it is.
Yeah.
That gets the views because it's hypey and exciting. The only transaction you really need there is the point at which you exfil, right? Whoever exfils with that item goes to wallet, or item sits in escrow and then is divided by four or five or six other wallets, depending on if it's a multiplayer team. All of that can be automated in the background, but you've only really got one smart contract to trigger with one transaction. The whole rest of the gameplay doesn't matter.
Absolutely. Look, I mean, coming back to our example with the cars, then we can actually remember the Fast and Furious, and then we just bet car versus car, and then the winner is getting the car. And actually, it could be the most expensive things now is probably the CS skins for the, and you know, the like the one CS skin could cost a lot. So imagine this CS skin is on the bet now. Those who win the game now is getting this one, and you know it costs 150K. So this is the excitement that we will see in the future, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, we've established the models today. It's just the mechanics for where that value goes and whether people want to trust being able to move that skin from one account to the other, or whether the game developers will allow it to happen. Yeah. A big part of why crypto appeals is that early on, it's the easiest, probably shortest and fastest form of value transfer digitally.
Absolutely.
I can send you Ethereum, Bitcoin, maybe not instantly, but we both download software, send money.
Yes.
Granted, there will be an exchange in the middle.
Traceable. You can see the story. You can see the ownership. You can see who was the owner before. Like with all these monkeys now, a lot of analytics, like who was using, how many times it was sold before the before now, and what was like a price. Yeah.
Is it an original owner one, or was how much has the value of this dropped? How much money has been lost on this ape over time?
Exactly.
Which is good and bad as well, right? Let's be clear. There's some dangers, or there's some downsides to that as well, in terms of protecting anonymity if people wish to remain anonymous, or what you can correlate from transactions related to those things. You know, if people know who the winner of that particular game was, and they then know who that person's wallet is, you can make other inferences as to what happens with that wallet, who they transact with, and then you can probably do more tracking, tracing, and open up negative effects to those people if you can start seeing their wallets, right? So we've got to be careful.
Yeah, sure. The industry goes this direction, definitely. You can see, like, from the last conference I visited with Vitalik Buterin, like, the two theses from this guy from the scene was, like, first one was the social recovery for the keys is good. It means that what we are stand to with our banks and other applications, if you lost your password, you have a recovery password, the procedure, you need to prove that you is you, but then you get your password recovery. The same will be in management of our keys. All these 12 words, 24 words, seed phrases, all these complications will go beneath. All you need is just to type your password and remember this forever. Then you will just get the access anytime to your wallet if you have this password. So yes, it's the same, like, security reasons people do this simple passwords, but at the same time, we did a lot in case of security of the Web2 stuff, of the recovering account of Google or Apple or something. I do not hear every day from my friends or, like, somebody stolen my Apple account or I cannot restore it back or something like this. So there are already established layer of security, and we need to put Web3 in the same, like, or all the best practices from Web2 to apply.
As close to it as we can, for sure. Yeah. And so as you were there with Vitalik, ironically, the reason he created Ethereum was because of his frustrations around World of Warcraft. Right? Yeah. I think it was World of Warcraft or one of
he was, and the soulbound tokens and so many things he brought from this, these purple things in World of Warcraft that you cannot sell. Once you get it, it's actually tied to your account and then it's it cannot be sold. And this is like, he's coming to the soulbound tokens, so-called this. A lot of Blizzard ideas nowadays, yeah.
Ethereum came from gaming, who knew? Or at least for those who didn't know, now you know.
Yeah.
Did you ask him for any advice around Banksys? Did he have any sagely wisdom for you as you guys were hanging out?
It's hard to catch him these days. I mean, he's very, very VIP person and having a lot of bodyguards, especially in Montenegro. It was funny. So look, for the next thing that he mentioned, important one, is the proof of innocence. The new topic and the big topic for the next, I would say, 5 years of establishing a regulation path, establishing the normal framework for transaction checking, the black market, money laundering stuff, terrorism, and so on. It's obvious that all the blockchains, like if Vitalik is talking about this, that in some updates of Ethereum, we will see this proof of innocence, and then all transactions by default would be white or black, or maybe gray one that is like considered as black. So that's probably what we are going to see in the nearest future. In this case, make it simple in case of wallets, management, seed phrases, all this stuff. And second, be ready to be transparent, because what we are now doing and all this Wild West will definitely wind down in a few years. And that's good, because look, in your credit card operations, you are pretty happy to be fully transparent, right? If you pay your Google Pay, you're not considering like you had a hidden transaction to your Tinder account. So it's kind of visible, maybe not for your wife, but for some systems in Apple, in your logs, in your Google mail, when you have a correspondence about it and so on. So there are some traces.
I didn't think we'd end up talking about my Tinder account today, but I've been exposed in 4K. Thanks for that, Alex. I appreciate you. It's time to battle. Are you ready for this? First ever maybe in LinkedIn entire history, first time we're going to do live gaming on LinkedIn. This is my moment. I was never going to be a Twitch streamer. I was never going to be a YouTuber, but maybe I can just live a little bit of my younger life out through LinkedIn Live. So here it is. For those of you listening in on the podcast, I'm going to do my best to try and explain what the hell is going on. If it is a struggle to you, come back to LinkedIn, come check out my profile, come find the previous events and come watch me and Alex battling live. We are going to bring Banksters up on the screen. So I'm going to try and present on shared screen Banksters. Hopefully that should appear on your screen now. Alex, can you see what's going on?
Yes, I can.
All right. So talk us through the start here. Before we get into a game, Alex, tell us a little bit about what's going on here. Where am I? I've got the Satoshi Nakamoto on the wall. I'm sat at my swaggy desk with my virtual screen in front of me, watching the markets. I've got flags. I've got my mining rigs in the back here. That's the scene. I'm getting ready for a battle. Talk us through what's in the game here. Talk us through some of the stuff we've got here on the left before we jump into it.
Absolutely. Look, for our followers and subscribers, just briefly, now you're in the Bankster room. And Anthony is the definitely the reptile, and you will see that the rarity of Bankster. He's sitting in the most fancy room in the game, definitely. But if you click on the right corner, you see a lot of heroes here, yeah. And probably you can just switch to from one to another to see like how different our rooms, and yeah, people can see how environment is changing because these guys are NFTs with some.
These are some of my scrub Banksters that are kind of living in their apartments. They've got the desk, they've got the mining rigs next to them. They've not, you know, these are the low level guys who haven't quite made it yet. They've still got the IKEA furniture, the box room, the picture of the Doge on the wall.
Yeah, look, I mean, this is the real life. We're all like dreaming and having different possibilities. For this purpose, we created hamsters, like free Banksters for everybody. So this guy, which is sitting with the box, everybody can obtain without any purchases, any tokens, any NFTs, anything. So this we found very important to do, to open the gate for Web2 users, Web3 users, for everybody who wants to learn more about crypto and crypto trading. So just jump in and enjoy the freemium version of a game. I'm pretty sure more than 90% of the people will never purchase any NFTs, any tokens, which is fine. Absolutely fine for those customers. It's just a game of fun, nothing else. So yeah, the main and the most interesting point here is definitely the competition or investment run. I will not spend the time to explain what is like my team mining academy, because probably people will be curious to jump in themselves and explore it more.
That's it. Save for the fact that as you start kind of having more players or having more NFTs, you can start leveling them up, breeding them. It becomes a little bit like a trading evolution kind of army type of game at the same time, where you're starting to build up your trading army. So I've already been playing a little bit here. So on the right hand side, you guys can see you've got my own self-titled NFT, my own character here. That's me. Obviously, I've been leveling myself up the most. Then I've got a number of other characters here. I've got Frida, I've got Vic, I've got Mead, I've got Errol, Orbit. I don't know where you got the names for these guys. They're utterly amazing. But each of these characters have different characteristics, different power-ups, different abilities. And so depending on who you play with, you have a different gaming experience. And just the final thing about the mining part here is I've got to claim those dollars, because I'm going to use those dollars to be able to play the game. So that's my stake to get into the game. So then we're going to go for an investment run. Talk us through it, Alex. What have we got here when now we've got the different game modes?
Yeah, we have four different game modes for a different set of players. We are starting with the free players. Then you have two for the five players. And you have a duel for two players one-on-one. And you can see there is a difference in entry fee and the rewards. So you can actually see this entry fee in like USD you just claimed for the first two battles. It means that it's your stake for the game. It's soft currency. But if in order to win the game, you need to use all the talents, imagine you won, you get the reward. This reward is in Bars tokens, which is our native tokens of a game. So in this case, you spend some soft currency to participate. In case you won, you get the real prize. And also you can see sometimes you have an entry fee in Bars and reward in Bars. It's for serious players who already understand what they're playing, and they want to compete like in a PvP mode, and they are ready to jump in into the serious like entry with the Bars token and being rewarded in Bars token.
That's gotcha. So you've got the free-to-play version. You can't play unlimited. You actually have to wait for the amount of dollars that you mine in the game to accrue up. So you can't just kind of keep spamming the game the whole time to level up. There is a little bit of a waiting component to it. Or what we're going to be doing today, I'm going to put some of my bars on the line and battle against you. So let's jump into it. We're going to go into a duel, 1v1. I'm going to choose myself. I'm going to back myself to win this one. And here, guys, you can look a little bit at my character's evolution. So I've got three power-ups. I've got Pump and Dump, which each one of these gives you a certain amount of points relative to the amount of energy that you need to use to get them. And the game is ultimately about how many points can you win over five rounds of the game. So I can use Pump and Dump, which is amusingly named my first power-up. That means that I can apply 46 points to the coin that performs the best based on real live trading data over the course of that 2-minute round. So that's completely random. I don't know which coins are going to perform well from the trading oracles, but that's a bit of a lottery for me. I might get 46 points back. I have to use one energy. That's a decent return. I've got Elon's tweet. That's my most powerful superpower. I get two energy to use it, and I get 90 points. Wherever I want to, I get complete control. Whichever coin I want, 90 points goes to me. And then finally, this one is an interesting one because the rally gives you 20 points for 3 rounds. So it's actually 60 points in total and only one energy to use. So it's actually quite an efficient one in terms of the amount of points you get back. But for your opponent, they can see if you use that rally and they can jump into the same coin and get the same bonuses. So you have to be a little bit smart with how you use that one, because your opponent can just jump in, swap coins to the same thing you do, and they might get the next 2 rounds worth of points the same as you. And then I've got some other features that I haven't unlocked yet because I'm still a scrub. I'm still level 19 or something, or haven't got to level 20 yet. So when I get to level 20, I'm going to get an extra superpower that I get to unlock. And so that's about it, right? But a part of it is also the strategy here. So I've got to look at which coins he's going to choose 5 coins. I'm going to choose 5 coins. And if my one does well, but his one does badly, that can have an impact. If I'm trending up, if I'm bullish about a certain coin, he chooses to go bearish on a certain coin, everything that I put on my points to boost up, he gets the same points boosted down. So if we have opposite positions on the same coin, whichever way the market swings goes very positively for one player, very negatively for another. So you've got to be a little bit clever with your strategy. Do I want to have the same coins as Alex and start playing the opposite to him? Or do I want to avoid him completely and just use my power-ups to pump my own coins and just stay the hell out of his way in case he tries to use some of his power-ups on me? Did I miss anything, Alex? Is that that's the basics, right?
Yeah, sounds absolutely right. I will just a little bit salt here. What do you see in general, and what we from the day one intended to create is the skill game. So everything you are doing here is transparent for you and for your opponents. The same is like you see what your opponents did after each single round. You can see what others are doing. You also see how much does it cost in advance and how much it brings you. If you use this card in advance, you know the entry fee in advance, and you know the price. Like now you can see it's all on your screen. All these elements, it's like by design we created to make it a skill game. And in order to avoid any possibilities of a chance here, even the talent you mentioned, like a pump and dump, which is, you don't know to which coin it applies, and it brings some possibility. It still can bring the possibility to your opponent. It means that it's like equals your chances at the, it all balanced to be a skill rather than any, like, you cannot make a hit here. You cannot miss the hit like in Axie Infinity. Sorry for the, like, the right.
Yeah, yeah.
But if something happens that you cannot control, or it's a chance that you miss something by some reason, it's already brings a more chance probability to the game rather than skills. We are building game of skills because we have a mission of this of education. We have a mission to show people what is actually going on. And in our case, the whole thing should be walking, talking, and doing the transparent things. So that's
right,
the only thing I wanted to add. And yes, we have a different talents, but we are very balanced in what we are doing.
All right, let's see how we do. I've been loading up on Gamersupps before this, so my nootropics are on point. I'm fully hydrated. My concentration is at the max. What I do have to say is we are live streaming this now, so you can theoretically see my screen, but I'm going to ask that you make sure that you jump onto a different tab so you don't see what I'm doing, and try not to listen too much to what I'm saying, because I am also going to be voicing my tactics out loud while people listen in on LinkedIn Live or listen back to us on the podcast. So this is the first ever live and then audio voiceover of gameplay on LinkedIn Live on my channel. So let's get into it. I'm going to click continue. I'm going to go into a duel. I'm going to see who's there. Before I do that, I've got to select my instruments. Obviously, I'm picking Cardano. I'm going to have Polkadot as well because I've got some love for the Polkadot community. Ethereum and Bitcoin are the classics. And then the question is, what am I going to go for next? I've got to pick five. And these are the instruments I'm going to start with. These are the coins I'm going to start with. I'm going to go with Monero. We love a bit of privacy as well around here. So that's my first five. Always do your own research. This is not investment advice, guys. We're just playing a game here. Full disclosure, we're just having a play with a game that makes use of live oracles of crypto data. This is not trading advice. This is not which coins to buy. These are just the ones I want to start playing with. And it will become obvious to you in a minute that the coins that I choose, it doesn't necessarily matter which ones I choose. It's more about the strategy that I play against Alex. So let's go. We're going in. The duel has started. 3, 2, 1, and we're in. So we're up against Driscoll Bloomberg, Alex's alter ego. First thing I want to look at is I want to look at the coin mixes. So he's got some of them the same as me. So he's picked Monero and Polkadot, same as me. He's also got Solana, Litecoin, and Ripple. So for the first thing, I do not want to start applying power-ups to the same coins that he has because he's going to get the same boosts that I do. So straight out of the gate, I normally like to use my Elon's tweet on something that I have that he doesn't, so I can get some nice early points on the board. And then I want to think about my next strategy. I'm happy having the same coins as him for a minute, but I do want to get to a negative position on something because I want to be able to start trading against him. I want to use my power-ups against him. I back myself, so I'm going to turn Polkadot. I'm going to swap from bullish on Polkadot to bearish, which might give me the opportunity to start using my power-ups against him and start taking some points. I'm also going to apply, I don't know, the pump and dump feels a little early for that. That gives you points to the coin that achieves the best performance. It feels a little early to that for me. So instead, I'm just going to grab 3 rounds worth of rally on Bitcoin because he doesn't have that either. 4 seconds to go in the round. It's about to end. Power-ups have been applied. Let's see what happens. Wow, he had a massive round. So at the moment, he's got 169 points to my 102. Let's see how he got them. He put it all down on Solana. He put a rally. He put a Vitalik's buzz and also a hype. So he put it all on one coin in that round. Now, what I do now know is that he's got 3 rounds worth of rally on Solana. So if I'm smart, I might swap one of my independent coins for his Solana and I can then go grab 2 rounds worth of his boost on that Solana for the next time. In the meantime, I've now inverted Polkadot. So I'm now bearish on Polkadot. He's bullish. So I'm going to hit him with an Elon's tweet. And I can't swap coin now because I've already swapped coin to be able to get out of there. So I've just got to hang in for that for the next time around. And I've got 1 point's worth of energy still to use. 29 seconds in the game. Are there any other obvious moves that I can play here? I could pump and dump possibly on Monero. That gives me 46 points, the one that receives the most. The highest trading coin in this round is Monero, but he's also got Monero. So I don't want to give him free points. So I'm going to hold off on that for the moment. I know he's come hard out of the gate. He's used 3 power-ups in 1 round. So I think he's spent. I don't think he's going to do too much in this round. He don't have too much to defend with. So let's see. All right. How's it played out? So I've now taken a bit of a lead. I'm now 197 points to his 125. He put a few points on Litecoin. He's still got the residual points coming through on Solana from the last round, but he took a big hit there. You see the negative 90 from when I hit him with Polkadot. Now he's been smart. What he's done there is he's inverted Polkadot. So now we're both bearish on Polkadot. I'm getting those extra Solana boosts. He's getting some of my Bitcoin boosts though, which I don't like the idea of. Now we're in round three. We've got three rounds to go. What I'm thinking is I've got three energy. I probably want to put it and try and get myself out ahead. I don't think he's necessarily going to have enough power to be able to beat me. Monero is looking quite nice. Maybe we might go for a little pump and dump on Monero now that that's trending up nicely and it's not going to compete with us. So let's give that a go. Oh no, Monero's now suddenly gone negative. Now you can see how the lottery of using a random power doesn't always help you. Monero was looking good, but now actually the best trading coin in live data is Polkadot. And so if I applied the pump and dump to Polkadot, he'd get the same points. I don't want to do it. So I'm going Elon's tweet. It's good old faithful. It's the one that I'm used to. I'm going to put it on Cardano. Just got it in time. And let's see, what did we do? Okay, so I'm still up. I'm up. He's got 234 points. I've got 322. In the last round, he put more on Litecoin. He's betting big on Litecoin. I might do a swap to some Litecoin for a round to get some of those extra couple of rounds worth of boosts. We've got two rounds to go. So that's what I think I'm going to do. I'm going to swap my Monero. I'm going to swap my Monero for Litecoin. I'm going to get a couple of rounds of extra boost off him. Thank you very much, Alex. I'm going to use my Elon's tweet again on a coin that he doesn't have, which is Cardano. Put it down on Cardano. It's where I am now. It's the happy place. And I'm looking, I'm watching for that pump and dump. Pump and dump gives me 46 points to the coin that performs the best in the round. And right now it looks like Monero plus 15 is trading pretty well. He doesn't have Monero. Cardano is also trading pretty well. He doesn't have Cardano. So I'm gonna hit the pump and dump, see if we can make it happen. Or I leave it so that I get two energy for the next round. What do I do? Do I go big now or do I save for a big pump and a big Elon's tweet in defense or attack in the last round? I think that's what I do. Okay, I'm gonna save that one energy. I thought I might have a chance to go big. Oh, if I could see the Twitch stream right now, or if I could see this, the comment section, people will be telling me, oh, you should put it all on. Am I going to live to regret that? If I lose by 46 points, oh, it's close. He hasn't caught me up on that one. Alex is at 300 points. I'm at 429. I've used the Elon's tweet. He's got a little bit of residual on his Litecoin. He used one of his power-ups on Ripple, which is a coin that I didn't have, into the last round. 1 minute to go. How are the boards looking? We're both on Litecoin. We're both on Bitcoin. We're both on Solana. We're both on Polkadot. The only thing I can do different is Cardano. That's the only place I can go where I get points and he doesn't. So first things first, use the Elon's tweet. Get that out. I'm guaranteed 90 points from that. There's no defensive moves he can play. There's no offensive moves I can play. We're pretty much on exactly the same coins. So all that leads me to do is I've still got 1 point to allocate. Do I risk a pump and dump? How's it looking? Solana's probably the highest trading coin in this round. If I put it on Solana, he's going to get the points too. So I can't probably risk taking that 46 points. So I'm just going to use my rally. It gets me 20 points. Obviously, ideally, I'd be using that over three rounds back to back. But for the time being, I'll just take the 20 points for this round. And hopefully that sees us over the line. 5 seconds to go. 4, 3, 2, 1. Close the bets. How did it look at the end of the day? And there we have it. 330 points to Alex, 531 points to me. We have taken the victory. Alex, how are you feeling after that?
Look, I mean, congratulations, my friend. That's it.
I think you may have taken it easy on me there, my friend.
Time to this. Look, you have your 45 bars as a prize, which is, yeah, nice.
I'll take it. First place. 500 points is not necessarily my highest score of all time, but I got some XP. I've got some of the banksters in the bank. I'm going to go back to the lobby, check out my balance now. Looking pretty nice. I'm going to claim some of my extra coins from mining so I can put those into my next round. I've gained some XP up at the top here that I can work towards getting some extra mining boosts later on that allows me to play more games. And I think with that, we'll come back to the conversation. Thank you for the game, Alex. I appreciate it.
Look, I mean, you kick my ass, like I told you. I mean, all the time I'm playing now with the real players. They are easy to beat me. on the things that I spent some time to think about and create here.
Any feedback on my game style, on my play style there? Would you have handled any of those things differently?
No, look, I mean, first of all, it's you're good. It's no doubt. You found yourself already with two main strategies. It's more than two, but yes, these two are very bold. And you can play with these cards, with your set, with the cards better if you avoiding. But there are some set of talents and traits that you will probably try to chase or to repeat somebody's choice and then use your talents because this works better. So it all depends on your bankster and its talents and so on. So it's worth to try your different tactics and so on. But in general, yes, it looks like chess a little bit. And to be honest, I would a bit disagree that it doesn't matter which coins you are choosing. Depends on the market conditions. I found it 50-50. It's like sometimes talents is more important which one you used. Sometimes it just doesn't matter which talent you are using. It's just the wrong choice of a coin. You get the wrong result. You're like trying to change it with your swap coin or swap position, but you can do it only once around. So it's kind of not easy, and then it's like easy to your opponents to get the benefits just because they were smarter by choosing this. Yeah,
I've had nights playing games. I don't know if you remember, probably a month ago or 6 weeks ago, Ripple was just doing something ridiculous. There was a huge amount of kind of interest or hype or concern or something around the SEC and Ripple, and that night, you know, Ripple's performance was just going off the charts, ridiculous. And so, and depending on different rounds, people were jumping in, getting like 500 extra points, like my entire game score in one round from the market just going absolutely nuts. And I guess that's part of the fun. And what I didn't kind of show people there when I do play the game is I also go and have a quick look at CoinMarketCap and look at the kind of live performance of some of the different coins. Again, with a view of saying which of these is likely to be most stable, or, you know, are any of these outperforming the market, so I can jump in on those and get the extra points in the game.
Yeah.
Again, for the sake of the game, for the points. This is not trading. This is not my own money on the line, but this is me sweating hard on the game.
Everybody's doing the same. We got several YouTube reviews of the game accidentally, like people did it by themselves, and they was like, I will now just go to my crypto exchange and see if this data is real data or not. Look, guys, it's a real data. And the best of it is just you can add on top of the real data your own influence. And it's actually a part of your learning curve as well. Because when you see the Doji as the asset, and you're probably thinking about investment into meme coin, you need to know that there is a guy called Elon Musk that is changing the logo of Twitter from the bird to the dog. And boom, you have like plus 20 points to Dogecoin. This is what's happening when you're using Elon's tweet in the game. So with this analogy, we are trying to show the so-called fundamental analysis, because there is a technical analysis when you're a little bit playing with the charts, trying to draw this something like a resistance or a lines or something like this to understand this from the technical standpoint, which we also will be able to explain to people. But the fundamental part is most fun and most interesting, because yesterday Gary Gensler said something, today a lot of projects got minus 20%.
We're not talking about Gary. We're not here to talk about Gary.
This is the life. If not him, then somebody else. You know, we have these fundamental things every day. We need to be prepared. And it's great that through the game, we can actually learn people what's happening in the world, how it's actually influenced, and make them a little bit fun while ruling, while doing this instead of Elon Musk themselves.
Nice. Well, look, thanks for jumping on and gaming with me today. I've achieved a little bit of a life's goal. I now feel like I can tick the Twitch YouTube game streamer box. It's never going to be me, but at least I had a bit of a go at it. Hopefully those listening in on podcast, that wasn't completely weird to listen to. We kept the energy up. You followed through. And again, if you want to come back and check out the live stream, it'll stay up on LinkedIn so you can watch what was actually happening. And or go play the game yourselves. So Alex, how can people find out more about Banksters? How can people go and jump in, have a play themselves?
Easy peasy. We are still in beta. It means without any investment from your side, guys, you can just try it on banksters.com. You just go there. You play the beta version of the game. You just having pure joy understanding of the game without any investment from your side.
Nice. And there are bug bounties out there for people who want to help with user experience, with the code, with the gaming experience. So people, you know, there's going to be rewards for people in real money as opposed to bars.
It's still there. Absolutely. Look, first of all, we have a leaderboard championship every week. We have this for real USDT, for real money. So we reward our players for being active on the platform, giving us feedback and so on. Second, like a small teaser, soon, very soon, we are going to have the first ever launchpad token sale and NFT sale. And before this, we will reward our active users with the BARS tokens, with NFTs. So be active, like do your stuff, do what you do on the game, tell your friends, and like wait for bigger news and you will hear more about Banksters soon.
Exciting things to come. Thank you, Alex, so much for joining us today. Thank you, everybody. We did kind of answer some of the questions in some of the conversation we had, a little bit about the technology, a little bit about how large organizations or game developers looking at this technology, looking at Web3. And so hopefully for those who did ask questions in the comments, we managed to cover some of them. Shout out to everybody who is giving love. Shout out to the women in Web3 in Switzerland who I met yesterday. I see some of you guys in the chat. Shout out all the others who were giving the GMs from around the world. We had Sweden, we had Turkey, we had USA, we had Switzerland, we had Portugal, a whole raft of the world covered in the show today. So thank you everybody for listening in. Alex, thank you so much for taking your time, and stay safe out there, my friend.
Thank you for having me. Bye, guys.
Thanks again for listening to the Blockchain Won't Save the World podcast. As always, opinions in this episode are mine and those of my guests alone. If you want to find out more, please feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Check out some of the other episodes on the Blockchain Won't Save the World podcast, and check out the YouTube channel, also called Blockchain Won't Save the World. Stay safe out there.